Welcome, SMQB listeners, to episode 171. Recording this on July 1st. Hey, fellas, I've got House, Milk, and Pope with me tonight.
What's up?
Hey, Rooster.
What's up, Rooster? What's going on,
guys? How you doing, guys? We hit some NBA free agency, which we'll talk about in a minute. But before we do that, let's talk about who you're bringing to the bar tonight, Pope.
So I am bringing Zach Brown, and it's not the band guy. I'm bringing Zach Brown from McLaren, the CEO principal of McLaren Racing, because it seems to me like they are now the clear number two to Red Bull. Seems like they're pretty stable with Lando and Piastri, and just want to pick his brain and figure out what his strategy is going the rest of the year and see if we can get a legitimate championship race. Pretty excited about that.
I'd be more excited about it if Verstappen wasn't such a damn cheater. Anyway, Milk, who are you bringing to the bar?
Well, I'm going to have one last drink in Tampa with Steven Stamkos right behind me.
You hate that guy.
We've had our ups and downs. I think that's well documented on this podcast.
Like you personally? But,
yeah, look, he's going to be 35 when the season starts. I'm not questioning the move to not re-sign him. I wish him the best in Nashville, but I would be a fool to not say that he was a big part of turning Tampa, of all places, into a pretty legit hockey town. So I wish him the best. Time to go. Thank you for your service.
How about you, House?
I have a couple people to bring to the bar. First, I'm bringing some new listeners from Long Beach Island crew. Spent some time talking to them this weekend. So welcome aboard to Pete and Garrett and Jason, Seth, Shoshana, a whole bunch of folks that are new listeners to the pod. It's great to have you on board.
Wow, that's exciting.
So yeah, I'm also bringing to the bar, going to have a white Russian with the white Russian, Matvei Michkov. So now that you're done with the cup in Tampa, Milk, you can just send it over to Philly. This is the new guy. This is the new guy that's going to take over the NHL. It might take a couple years, but eventually that Stanley Cup will be back in the backyard with me and Matvei having a couple white Russians.
All right, let's hope. I'm taking one of your favorite all-time college coaches, Jay Wright, baby. After the success of his Nova Knicks, and yeah, now getting their compadre, Mikal Bridges, I would love to know whether, A, how proud he must feel for how well these guys have done in the NBA, and whether he thinks twice about returning to coaching, considering that his coaching strategies and methods have worked so well on guys who, let's face it, aren't superstars, but collectively play like a superstar team.
Yeah, you might. I wonder if he's the guy that you need to get the championship along with those guys.
Yeah, maybe. So last 12 hours or so have been huge for the NBA. House, I know you're chomping at the bit to unring the bell that you rang at the bar a couple of weeks ago. How are you now feeling about Paul George?
I mean, I want to say I apologize to Daryl Morey. I think I might have said on this pod to get nowhere near PG3. But look, this is Embiid's team, right? So this is Embiid has complained in prior off seasons that he was watching other teams fill up their roster with star free agents. And whether it's still the model or not that you need three megastars on a team in order to get you a championship, you could arguably say that the Celtics had that, and maybe more, maybe even a fourth. The Sixers now have three megastars. The three of them, Embiid and Maxey and PG3, just if they go with their scoring averages, will start the game scoring 83 points. And I think they gel very well together, their style of play. And we'll talk in a second here what the Mavs did, but to put a player on the floor that you always have to worry about, one of what all the pundits say and all the critics say about why PG3 will work so well with the Sixers team is not so much what he'll do with the ball in his hands, but what he does off the ball, whether it's setting screens or whether it's being a decoy for a legitimate shot. They just couldn't get that out of Tobias Harris. And I don't know what you guys think, but I really think over the last few years, but especially now where we are, given the Knicks getting Mikal Bridges, given the Celtics returning all five starters next year, it's really hard to imagine that Dame could possibly have the same kind of year that he had last year, down year with the Bucks. The power has shifted unbelievably to the East. I mean, you could easily see eight teams that KCP moved to the Orlando Magic. They're improved. You can expect that Paolo Banchero is only going to continue to grow with the Orlando Magic. It's not like the Cavs are any slouches. And we saw how good the Pacers played in this last postseason, pushing the Knicks. What do you think, Rooster? I mean, you're the guy sitting here on top of the Knicks' great success. What do you think about what's happening?
Well, let me ask you this. Would you be this excited if the Sixers had just signed Julius Randle?
No.
Well, their career stats are almost identical. In fact, Randle's 20 points a game and Paul George's 20.8 points a game. Randle has couple more rebounds per game, and they have about the same number of assists per game. And Paul George has a huge injury history. His own team wouldn't sign him for the fourth 4 years. They wanted to give him a 3-year deal. And even though they gave up, you know, they spent like 5 years after Ballmer bought that team, spending hundreds of millions of dollars and giving up countless draft picks to get Kawhi, Paul George, Westbrook, and Harden. And they gave away Paul George for nothing. They could have traded him to the Warriors, and they gave him away for nothing, all because they didn't think it was worth paying him for 4 years. He's going to be 38 years old in the fourth year, making $56 million from the Sixers. That would scare me off. I think you were right 2 weeks ago when you said, get a young, rising superstar.
I think they tried for that. I really do. I think Bridges was in their crosshairs. They needed to get a Maserati in the garage for Embiid. They needed something to make this team challenge the Celtics. Did they overpay for PG3? Yeah, I think you make a good point that in year 3 and 4 of his contract, we're probably going to be hurting about that. But here's what's interesting. The Sixers happen to own some of the Clippers' future first-round draft picks. And so guess what just happened to Clippers? They just got a lot worse as a team. I mean, Harden's aging, Kawhi's aging. I think the Clippers are going to fall now towards the bottom of the playoff ladder in the West, if not miss it altogether. And so I think the way Morey sees this is, look, we've got a 2-year window now, at least with Embiid and PG3. They just signed Tyrese Maxey to a 5-year max. So now they've got the youth that's going to stick with that team and build in the future. And if this thing doesn't work out, they've got probably will be very high first round picks from the Clippers. I think Paul George is a spectacular playmaker. He's a spectacular shot maker. He's a spectacular pick and roll player when he's healthy. The Sixers will do nothing at all. They won't ever get past that second round, which has been their albatross forever, unless they can go to the playoffs healthy and stay healthy. Without it, you're right. This will end up being a huge, huge burning hole in the pocket from what we paid out for, I don't know, some $600 million worth of contracts between the three of them that we've got going between Embiid and Maxey. I still think the Sixers are short power forward. I don't really know who's going to play four for the Sixers. I still think the rumors are right now that the Jazz are down to the Warriors and the Sixers for Lauri Markkanen. And if the Sixers finish this offseason by filling up that four slot with Markkanen, yes, you'll have to give away some of those first round picks I just mentioned. We will I firmly believe we will compete with the Celtics, but throwing it back to you, Rooster, on the Knicks, today you lost Isaiah Hartenstein to the Oklahoma City, which I think is fantastic for that team. I mean, truly, he will fit in great with what that team is doing right now. But the Knicks were incredible. They do have the Nova 4, but what is expected of the Knicks next year for a healthy, scoring, rim-protecting, rebounding center for the Knicks? Who do you got?
Well, we have Mitchell Robinson, who, before he got hurt, was the starter ahead of Hartenstein. Hartenstein was his backup. But I like Hartenstein better, frankly. And I agree with you. I think Oklahoma City is one of the big winners in free agency because their Achilles heel against the Mavs was they couldn't defend the alley-oop. And Hartenstein's not going to have any of that. There's no alley-ooping on Hartenstein. So they've gotten a lot better. I think the Knicks are going to have to look for a team like maybe the Blazers now have three centers. You know, didn't they just draft Klont, the guy from Connecticut?
Oh, Klingon?
Klingon, yeah. They had Ayton, and they had Rob Williams from the Celtics. So the Knicks are going to have to pick up somebody like that, and of course it won't be Klingon. They need to pick up someone like that to back up Robinson again because he's also injury prone. But don't forget, they re-signed OG, and Julius Randle's going to be healthy again. That was a 20-point hole in their scoring lineup. They're going to have Josh Hart and DiVincenzo on the bench to start next season. That's pretty amazing.
Not to mention that Miles McBride is like 23, 24 years old. I mean, you know, the bench is going to be solid. The Knicks bench is going to be incredible. But they're going to be missing a big man, I think, a little bit.
We need a big man to go up against the Sixers, the Bucks, and most of the West teams if they get that far. Milk, have you been following this NBA trade season at all?
Tampa guy loves the NBA.
No, I mean, the only question I really have is if the Philadelphia sports teams don't win a world championship in the next 3 years out of football, basketball, and baseball, does House leave the city, or what happens?
I think he should.
It seems like all his teams have gone all in, so that's where I'm at right now.
I'm just going
to be taking a lot of PMs to the bar. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, just another Purple Heart to all my shrapnel.
Pope, who do you think the winners are in the last couple of days?
Well, I mean, you know, we're all speaking about our teams. I mean, you know, the Mavs just picked up a one half of the Splash Brothers today.
One half of the Splash Brothers.
Well, hold on.
No, he's 34.
Pope, real quick, House said it's over for the Mavericks, and then 2 hours later they signed Clay. Did that change your opinion, House? Of what was happening.
I think the Mavs improved considerably, but I do want to hear from Pope about Rooster's point about what we're going to see from Clay as half of a half.
I love Clay Thomas. I hope he gets back to Thompson, 90% and has a great couple more years. I just don't see it happening. What do you think, Pope?
Well, I mean, he's 34. He and Paul George are the same age. They both have health issues. Clay obviously has been really limited the last couple years. He's not a shell of his former self, but he's definitely not his former self. But where the Mavericks really missed in the finals was they didn't have a dependable third scorer. I mean, you had, you know, scorer by game. You had PJ, you know, who every now and then would throw in 20 or so from the corner, but Clay is a dependable and experienced, championship experienced shooter from the perimeter. And with Luka and Kyrie, they are going to have, as House texted, they're going to have plenty of opportunities to get him open looks. So, you know, are they going to depend on him in the regular season for lots of minutes? I doubt it. Will he start? Probably. He'll start where Daniel Jones Jr. We lost him today. Left.
Who's the guy who was your number three scorer through the season and didn't play at all in the playoffs.
No, Hardaway.
Hardaway's gone.
Hardaway's gone. He's part of a sign and trade that got us Clay.
The reason he's gone, though, is because he couldn't play any defense. Clay does play good defense even now.
Yes, that'll help. But we don't, you know, Hardaway had other issues, like he couldn't shoot, especially during the postseason, which definitely affected his value. But we also picked up, and House, I don't know, I mean, you're a Pelicans follower. What's the story on Najee Marshall? He looks like a dog. Looks like a baller.
Yeah, no, that's a nice player for you. That's
yeah.
I missed
like 39% from three. That's pretty damn good on your team.
Yeah,
I missed that part of free agency. Did the Mavs also pick up Najee also as well?
They picked up Najee, so they let Daniel Jones Jr. go. He went to the Clips today.
So I think the Mavs have definitely improved. The Nuggets have stood still. I think that the T-Wolves significantly improved through the draft.
Yeah.
The Pelicans got better adding DeJounte Murray from the Hawks, but I come back again like the Knicks and the Mavs, same issue. Who's your big man? Like
Mavs?
Oh, the Mavs have two good.
They got two of them. They got Gafford and then Lively. Look out for Lively his second year. He's going to be
really.
He's going to be up there. Absolutely.
I think he's only getting better.
And he's going to be a perimeter threat. He's going to be one of those guys, almost like can play any position. I'm telling you. I think just look out.
Unlike the Nuggets, the Celtics are a winner just by staying pat. They didn't lose anything important. The Nuggets needed to get something else on that team because they're getting old and injured like Jamal Murray, and they lost Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So and Porter just seems to be on a downslide. So the Nuggets are going to be weak next year, I think, relative to the Thunder and the T-Wolves.
And you know what is interesting is like almost every year this time we have this talk. Who do we talk? We talk about the draft picks who are going to influence potentially next year. This year you don't hear any of that. I mean, this was such a dud draft.
I don't know. I think there are going to be some people who weren't at the top of the draft who are going to contribute. Like, I think Stephen Castle will contribute on the Spurs because the one thing that Wembanyama has missed all last year was somebody who could get him the ball.
Well, that changed today.
And they got CP3, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is CP3's seventh different team.
Wow.
He's still in search of that elusive title, and I don't think he's going to get it with this team.
I thought he was full-time State Farm.
I don't think he's going to get it with this team, but it is going to be fun to watch. The guy can still distribute the ball, and I think he's the kind of player that will advance Wemby's career even further. I don't think all of a sudden, mentor Stephen Castle. It was
Spurs also picked up one of my Tar Heels, Harrison Ingram, he's got a lot of potential. They got him in the second round. He has got a lot of potential. So I like to look at what he's going to be able to do down there as well.
And who wound up getting Filipowski?
The Jazz. Because he went to the Mormon city.
His stock draft dropped because he was being groomed by an older woman.
Who
went to school at Alabama. He brought her to his high school prom, and she had graduated from college.
That was amazing.
He might have to run for president of France.
But what's interesting though is that on the Tar Heel, Twitterverse, Filipowski's family is pushing back, and they're saying that Shire and his staff enabled this to happen. So they're really pissed off at Duke, and they're trying to say that there's a problem with the Duke staff and that he's no Coach K. I don't know where it's going. It's just kind of interesting.
I want to ask you guys' opinion also in the NBA, all the moves. Talk about getting a Maserati in the garage and getting Embiid his toy. We haven't really talked about what your take is on getting LeBron his toy, and that is his ability to play with Bronny. You know, I don't really think Bronny can play NBA basketball. And while a 12th or 13th, 14th man on the bench in the NBA probably wasn't going to get playing time anyway, this little pacifier for Bronny, I mean, this pacifier for LeBron means somebody is out of an NBA job. I think I don't see him playing in the G League or something like that. I mean, I think he's going to be sitting on that bench, and one night when they're up by 30, he's going to get on the court. So they're both in the same uniform at the same time, and they can take their Griffey Jr. picture together, but they're never going to play meaningful minutes together. And he's depriving somebody that theoretically can actually play NBA basketball. That's my take. But do any of you guys think like, hey, the guy's one of the Rushmore in the NBA. He deserves what he wants. Fine. It's a good story. He's playing with this kid.
By the way, yeah. LeBron just unfriended.
He's okay. Sorry, LeBron.
Well, he unfriended me when I said,
anyway.
I said he wasn't the GOAT.
We can talk openly about this since Nace isn't on the podcast today.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, seriously, what the hell was that? I asked you guys last week. I was like, did he suck at USC? And you're like, I don't know. It was 1 year. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, are you telling me that LeBron went in there and said, draft my son or else?
It's worse than that.
Because he told JJ.
His
podcast partner
threatened other teams that if they drafted Bronny before 55, that somehow Bronny was going to play in Australia, so you were going to waste your pick, which is the biggest bunch of horseshit ever. He was never going to Australia ever. So basically, they said,
wasn't it Rich Paul?
Yeah, well, it was somebody on the clutch team. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not hating on LeBron.
Look good.
LeBron is definitely Rushmore basketball. I'm not hating on LeBron. I'm more saying I feel bad for the guys that are trying so hard to get in the NBA, and now some guy who could otherwise play in the NBA is out of a seat on an NBA bench so that LeBron can have Bronny with
him. So I'll give you the opposing argument, not necessarily agreeing with it, but I heard Kevin Garnett give an interview yesterday, and he was at the workouts for the draft picks. Yeah, he said, look, first of all, remember that Bronny had a heart condition that almost killed him on the court, and he didn't play much. And he said, what I'm seeing right now, I see it. I see a guy with the potential to play in the NBA. And for a 55th pick or wherever it was, to me, for what I'm seeing out there, I think it was worth it. That's Kevin Garnett. I think you're right. I think it was only because LeBron was passive aggressively saying, I'm going to opt out of my contract and let's see how the draft goes, et cetera. Now he's saying, all right, now that I got my son, I might even restructure my deal. If you go get me Clay, that didn't work out. So let's see who else they're after. It might be Brandon Ingram or something like that. But he scored 4 points a game, last year for USC. He didn't do anything on the court to justify that pick. But some people think they see the potential.
I mean, if you look at the history of guys in the drafted in like the last three or four picks of the second round, it's not good.
Yeah.
So is it a throwaway pick to satisfy, the guy that's going to decide the future of your franchise for the next 2 or 3 years? Maybe makes him happy. Were you going to get a quality player at 58 who was going to make your roster? Doubtful. They're not guaranteed contracts anyway. So, the thing is Bronny wasn't even the best player at Sierra Canyon where he went to prep school. So it'll be interesting to see if he does have NBA talent. I doubt he'll ever play meaningful minutes, I guess.
The smart move would be to get him in a couple of games when they're way up early in the season, get the photo ops, and then send him to the G League.
Let's see what he does. I mean, they should give him all the playing time he could possibly get in the summer league. And let's see what Bronny does in the summer league.
Yep.
Yeah, in Vegas. I think they will.
Anybody have anything else on the NBA?
I've got one question.
I'll send you guys the parade route for later.
Yeah. As an uneducated NBA fan, on the outside looking in, it looked like Boston was way obviously ahead of Dallas in the finals, best team in the NBA. Anybody bridge the gap in free agency in the draft that in y'all's mind that could actually handle Boston? You're saying Philly, Toby.
St. Philly, New York, Oklahoma City. And then in the draft, maybe if the Timberwolves can grow up and learn how to play consistent basketball, maybe they could.
And I'm going to say Dallas. I mean, they had their opportunities in the finals, and they couldn't get a third scorer, and it really killed them. So I think that we're a better team. Are we as good as the Celtics now? No, but, you know, you got 82 games to get ready for the playoffs.
I think at least in the East, there was a large gap between the Celtics and everybody else. I think the Knicks and the Sixers did a lot to close that gap. I still think the Celtics are the best. They're the champions. They re-signed everybody. Everybody's coming back. But I think adding Bridges and adding PG3 to the Knicks and Sixers respectively has closed that gap a lot.
And it remains to be seen how Porzingis recovers. At best, they're saying 6 months.
Went back to back.
Is he going to have surgery?
He had the surgery, and they're saying it'll be December.
I didn't even follow that after the finals.
All right, let's move on. House, you wanted to talk about this whole notion of the GOAT. Talk to us.
Well, look, I mean, every time we have had this conversation by text a million times, and probably our listeners have had the conversation too with their buds on text, because it's now just, we just drop it like, you know, the easiest saying, GOAT is no longer reserved for somebody like Muhammad Ali or in the day, Michael Jordan. I think so much of this came about with LeBron, which was a legitimate argument that you could make as LeBron started to stack up his achievements and his MVPs and then even championships. Who is the greatest of all time? And there's one side that says you can legitimately make the comparison and choose one. And there's another that will say it's generational. It kind of depends on their competition, and it's a little bit apples and oranges. But I thought it would be interesting to see whether or not you guys think that we are watching right now in any sport in the world, any sport, you name it. Are we still in the midst of the GOAT? I have one, but I'm curious what you guys think. Is it overused? Is it a legit argument to say, for example, you know, Jack versus Tiger, LeBron versus MJ? People started already making comparisons. We'll get to him in a little bit. Well, people started making comparisons because of the record that he broke between Connor McDavid and Gretzky. Not to mention they wore the same uniform, but like, where do you guys come down on this GOAT thing? And are we in the midst of watching one right now?
Let's have Milt talk. We haven't heard much from him. Go for it.
Hey, I contribute a lot in NBA, man. Come on. Well, I think when you're thinking about, to me, like when you're thinking about a GOAT, you're first of all in complete awe of this athlete. And when you're watching him, your expectations are beyond, like when we used to watch Tiger, right? Your expectation was he's going to win the tournament. Your expectation was he's going to win that major. And most of the time he did. And he's like the greatest, for me, for my generation, example of watching a living GOAT, where you knew he was better than Jack. He didn't end up winning as many majors, but he got injured. We know his history. But you were watching him knowing it. You knew that he was better than Jack, and he was the greatest golfer of all time. I know who your GOAT is, I'm sure, House. Probably Messi.
I don't think you do.
Not Messi?
Okay. All right. So I would say Messi is at that caliber, right? You watch him and you're like, this is the greatest soccer player who's ever lived. Like, there's no doubt about it. There's no one even really like close, right? Arguably.
I wonder if House is going with Ohtani.
I struggle with anyone else. Aaron Judge, like Ohtani. I mean, these are young guys. I don't watch them in that same, like, oh my God, this is the greatest. you know, whatever X sport other than maybe Messi. I just don't see it. I used to be that feel that way about Brady, and you did too, House. I, you know, this is the best quarterback that's ever played, and he proved it time and time again. But I mean, do you all think there's a lot? I think it's such a rare exception. Like, they only come around every 15, 20, 30 years, and you just watch it and you know it. When you're, I don't see a lot of it right now.
Well, can we agree there's not one in hockey now?
No. Who's out there? You're like, oh, right. this guy's better than Gretzky.
Right.
This guy is like,
right.
No. It was fun when back in the day when Lemieux was making his run, it had he stayed on course and not have issues himself that he ran into with injury and stuff, he would have broken Gretzky's records. I think that if Nace were able to make today's podcast, he would make some argument relative to Ovi. He would say if he ends up breaking this record, how can you not at least not say he's the greatest goal scorer of all time? He will have broken Gretzky's record. I don't know that he would say that, but there's an argument that can be made.
I think there's got to be a component of, like you guys said earlier, what Jordan and Tiger brought to the equation, which was in crunch time, you knew they were going to hit the shot or to win the game or the match. Just because you're good, like Connor McDavid, doesn't mean you're the GOAT until you start winning in crunch time, putting a team on your back and winning big games and championship games. I mean, I really think that this whole notion of GOAT and Mount Rushmore is just kind of a creation of the over proliferation of sports talk shows, including podcasts like ours, where these fucking lemmings can't think of anything original to talk about. So they keep going into
that's not us,
debates over and over again. Who's on Mount Rushmore of basketball, blah, blah, blah. Who are the GOATs?
Yeah.
Until the person's either towards the end of their career or they've retired and you've had a chance to even look back and compare, it's just it's premature to be talking about Connor McDavid as a GOAT or even LeBron until recently.
But you knew was better than Jack. Right. I mean, maybe Pope might argue against this.
Right. Because of his crunch time, you know, dog. He was a dog. He ripped people's hearts out just
so
like
Jack.
Jordan and just like Tom Brady. You know, you could talk about Tom Brady as a GOAT after he went to the Bucks and won another Super Bowl. But you can't talk about Jordan Love as a potential GOAT or Caleb Williams or some newbie. You just can't do that. But people do. It's crazy.
Brady was a GOAT before that. Like, there's no look at the
debate. Back when you hated him? Back when you hated him, you already was
right. I hated his guts, and then I loved him.
It's all about the laundry.
You know,
I think it's fun. I know that there's lots of pods and magazines and TV shows. I think it's fun to go down, whether it's for your own team, who's the Rushmore of players on a given team in your city, who's your Rushmore for your city, who's the greatest. Like, Rooster, if we asked you who's the greatest linebacker of all time, we all know what your answer would be, right? It would be
right.
Your beloved LT.
Yeah, but, you know, but there would be an argument for Dick Butkus or Lambert, but I would of course say LT.
That's what I
do. Can any of you think of a living GOAT that we're watching right now compete?
Messi.
Great.
Well, is Serena still playing?
Nope.
She's not. No. But she's I am going to give you.
Are you going to say the Joker?
No. Because Nadal was right there with him.
Well, how I mean, about... he's still playing and he's got more majors than anybody else. And he
all right, probably. How about Max Verstappen?
Oh, God.
No,
not yet.
I think his days are numbered.
How about, can I win this one with Simone Biles?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I think right now, I just saw the highlights of her qualifying for the U.S. Olympic team.
Yeah.
It is mind-blowing what she does, and she's gobbled up a gazillion medals, and I think she already is going down, but will continue to go down as the greatest women's gymnast of all time, and we're watching it right now. I think that's a legit GOAT.
That's an excellent point. In fact, that's a good one. That was my buzzer beater. She got the only automatic spot on Team USA by just dominating the Olympic trials. And it's her third trip to the Olympics. She's not even that old, right?
Well, as far as the gymnast
she can do one more beyond this. I mean, I think she's going to want to do it in her home country, but she'll be a little bit long in the tooth for a gymnast in 4 years. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, four times. That's amazing. All right. You know, we can make this into a pretty quick episode if we move along. Anyone else have some GOAT conversation?
No, but we would love to hear from our listeners. If you think there's somebody that's legit, put it into the smqbsmailbag@gmail.com or on any one of our social sites. We would love to hear you join in the debate here and defend your GOAT, whoever you think it is.
It's getting at one played for a Tampa team. That's all I know.
I just conclude by saying I think it's unfair to great players to constantly have this debate about them. LeBron is a great player. He's a great person. And when people get into this debate about LeBron versus Michael Jordan or Bill Russell or whoever, it kind of runs him down. You know, they're casting shade on LeBron. LeBron has played well enough to deserve to be considered an all-time great already. You know, stop trashing the guy just because you think one other player was better. So what? You know, he's still awesome. Anyway, who's got a punchable face? Don't call it a
comeback. I do. It's a short one, and I don't know if you guys heard it in the news this week. Do you guys remember that vaunted draft pick that the famous Oakland Raiders took in Jamarcus Russell?
Jamarcus Russell, yeah.
Yes, is he alive?
Jamarcus Russell.
He's recovering from the drink.
Jamarcus Russell is alive, and he had volunteered, which you would think is a really nice thing. He was volunteering to be a coach at Williamson High School in Mobile County, Alabama. And Jamarcus Russell had encouraged a local business owner to make a donation to the school. And instead of taking that donation and delivering it over to the school, Jamarcus Russell kept that $74,000 check for himself.
Oh, God.
And God. Whatever problems Jamarcus Russell may be having, listen, man, good on you to help kids out by volunteering and whatever skills that you've developed as a player. But come on, man. Like, that's the worst thing you could possibly ever do. And he even showed up to the field after that, and the school had to come out and say, you're not welcome here anymore. And so, I don't know. This is what this title is reserved for. Sorry, Jamarcus, but that you are this week's punchable face of the week.
How much money did he steal from the Raiders? $30 million? I'm serious. The best, by the way, real quick, the best Jamarcus story and the best story ever is when they tricked him and gave him video that there was nothing on the tapes, and he went home and watched all the tapes, and they were like, there was nothing on them.
They gave him video for a homework assignment.
Right.
For the next game.
we tricked you.
Oh my
God. I've got one.
We should have a joke about to start off the podcast. Instead of who you take into a bar, it should be Jamarcus and Jameis walk into a bar.
Oh, Jameis.
All right. Pope's got one.
I've got one. I guess it might tie into a buzzer beater in a way, but I'm going to punch Tim Weah, the U.S. men's soccer team player who took it upon himself, I guess, maybe to get even for our goalie being taken out and no card being issued in the Panama game. But, I mean, yeah, the guy was getting in his grill a little bit, but he doesn't justify a punch to the head of the opposing player right in front of the referee, which resulted in an automatic red card. He's going to be suspended for 2 games, but like that really matters because he put the U.S. in an untenable position where they had to play with 10 guys against a spirited Panama team. They should have beat Panama, probably should have beat them with 10, but it was really tough. Couldn't even get a draw. Without Weah's actions, I think U.S. wins that game, maybe one or two goals. And we don't have to worry about this Uruguay game tonight where they are on the brink of being eliminated in the biggest soccer competition other than the World Cup. So, Tim Weah, you punch someone, I'm going to punch your ass.
This is an angry podcast because I have one too.
Oh, my God.
I need to come up with one.
Yeah, yeah. You remember a couple of seasons ago, we punched the Rockets' first-round draft pick, Kevin Porter Jr., for his disgusting behavior in a hotel where he tried to kill his fiance. He punched her in the face, choking her to death, tried to strangle her. He's charged with felony assault and strangulation and was banned from the league. Last season, he didn't play at all. Well, the NBA has let him back in with a slap on the wrist, saying he has to get some counseling. When you're that age and your reaction to conflict with your girlfriend is to try to kill her, it's 1 year going to do to change that personality, right? So the Clippers just signed him to a 2-year deal, and I'm punching the NBA and the Clippers for even letting this guy back in so quickly with just a slap on the wrist. There's no evidence that he's changed. And I just think that crime was too severe to get back in after a year off. It's just disgusting.
Barbecue sauce.
All right, after all
that. I really hope Milk's got a lasso. I really hope Milk's got a lasso.
Someone say something nice.
Just make it up about some piece of crap. Talk about Little League baseball.
I have something negative about college football, but I was going to save that for buzzer beater.
Let's move on to buzzers. I don't have a fucking lasso. Right.
You have a lasso?
No one's done anything good this week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to buzzer beaters.
Go ahead, Milk.
Go ahead, Milk.
No, well, I wanted to comment because I rightly predicted that the NIL would destroy college football. I was the first one to say that in case you guys forgot and go back to the tape 2 years ago. But have you guys noticed this new trend that all these colleges are doing with their recruits and like putting the cars out, the Lamborghinis
yes.
and everything?
Yeah.
UT.
So did you see the one from Texas?
Yes, what I'm just yeah. said. UT, yeah.
Yeah, UT. Well, so then USF in Tampa, USF, South Florida, lined up 40 cars in Raymond James Stadium where the Bucks play.
Oh, my God.
Lamborghinis, Corvettes, all of the stuff. And they've got guys in the cars revving the engines as the recruits walk by. It's really bad, guys. It's worse than I thought. And I don't know. I don't know how long college football lasts from here. It's very sad to see, but
it is.
You got to see these videos. It's unbelievable.
We did. We talked about the unintended consequences, and now we're seeing them.
It's crazy.
I think we're scratching the surface.
Yeah, oh, it's going to get much worse.
Hope you have a buzzer.
Yeah, my buzzer is, so my background is the unbelievable bicycle kick by Jude Bellingham of England. And, you know, House is our resident soccer expert, but clearly one of the great international competition goals of all time. You have to admit. I mean, less than 20 seconds left probably in the game. And on the last set piece, a throw in, there's a backhead, and then Bellingham does a bicycle kick that puts England tied with Slovakia, which was about to be arguably one of the biggest international upsets of all time. And then Harry Kane, my former Tottenham guy, has a great header goal, you know, within minutes of the extra time, and they hold on and they advance. But what an amazing, you know, play by Bellingham. And then that kind of ties us into, I'll let House talk about the rest of the Euro stuff, but the U.S. tonight, there's only a couple scenarios where they get through. And they have really, you know, they're not even really in control of their own fate. They have to beat Uruguay, but then they have to have some help from Bolivia. And when you're depending on the Bolivians for help, you're pretty much fucked.
And yeah, I mean,
House, what do you have?
I'm just going to pick up a little bit on that. As we mentioned in the pod, the summer's great chance to, besides the Olympics this year, it's a great chance to try on different sports. And this week is a great chance for our listeners and folks who don't normally follow soccer, F1. I mean, this is giving you all the drama. The greatest teams in the world, or I should say in Europe, because some of the greatest teams in the world, like Argentina and Brazil, are playing in the other competition. But we mentioned in the pod that the Euros going on right now will now have, not in the semifinals, not in the finals, but you will have Titans playing each other. Probably the favorites to win the Euros are either Spain or Germany, and they're playing each other in the quarters on July 5th. Portugal just outlasted Slovakia on PKs when Portugal's goalie saved all three of the PK shot. Incredible saves, all three from Slovakian players, and then made all three of their own, which eliminated the need to go to five goals. So Portugal, with Ronaldo and their superstars on their team, will face Mbappe in France in another quarterfinals. And then Harry Kane and his team will play the upstart, who do not sleep on Switzerland. This is a team that on that half of the draw could make it all the way to the finals. They play phenomenal defense. They're very well coached. And then tomorrow, we will see the winner of Netherlands, Romania, and Austria, Turkey. Austria is another upstart team. They will also make it in the quarters. Then over in the Copa America, you got on one side of the draw, heavyweights of Brazil and Argentina and Colombia battling it out. And on the other side, most likely it's going to be Argentina versus Canada with an American coach named Jesse Marsh, which is kind of fun to see because he got sacked over in England. But you'll have the potential of Messi in the finals against one of Colombia, Brazil, or most likely one of those two. It's really, really been great, great soccer. And I don't know if anyone's covering F1, but eventually we're going to have to talk about Max and whether it goes overboard.
Yeah, I'm going to cover that.
Okay.
You do that, Rooster, because that was unbelievable.
You jump in. So I think that if F1 ever wants to get serious about stopping this, what seems to be rampant behavior of one driver driving another off the track and taking the guy out, they're going to have to change the rules. And it's going to have to be kind of extreme because it's been Magnussen all year with crazy driving that are pissing people off. This time it was the best driver out there, Max, who clearly moved over and ran Norris off the road on a turn in like the 51st lap of the 57 lap race where Norris was about to pass him. Max knew it. Everybody knew it. Norris had gained on him and was going to pass him.
And he had DRS.
And Max caused a crash that punctured Norris's tire, ended the race for Norris, and Max was able to limp back to the paddock and box and get a new tire and finish in sixth place. To me, the stewards need to have the authority to, A, disqualify Max from that race right there, and possibly even the next race for that behavior, and B, put out a red car and resume the race after a pit stop for everybody so that Norris isn't penalized for Max's shitty behavior. There should be a way for Norris to finish that race without anyone else in any other position than they were already in. They did it before a few years ago. Remember when they had that finish where the safety car basically just drove everyone around the track. Norris was robbed of a victory in that race, and it's just not right.
Agreed.
And I don't just say that because I picked him in our pool.
Well, I haven't seen the follow-up, but you know, Lando and Max are really good friends. And they asked Lando after the race if they were still going to be friends. And he said, well, it kind of depends on his answer to what he did. So I don't know, because Max said he didn't do anything wrong.
Max says, look, everybody knows that I start to move over in the curve before I break. And the interviewer said, well, all of the commentators and all the stewards who gave you a 10-second penalty disagree. And he said, well, they're not in the car. He had zero contrition, none.
That makes for a delicious British Grand Prix at Silverstone this week.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I do like the drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mercedes is, showing a little. Toto was couldn't believe his great luck. He finally won a race.
Like Bill Belichick's girlfriend.
That would be Logan Sargeant winning.
Real quick, how's percentage chance the U.S. advances out of the in Copa?
15%, and that's only because Uruguay's already through, their manager suspended, and maybe they won't go full throttle tonight. And I give it very, very low chance. Real shame for Christian Pulisic, who's played unbelievable. Real shame.
We're one up right now in goal differential with Panama, right?
Yes, but Panama's going to play Bolivia. Panama's going to blitz Bolivia, and it's just not it's not like us to probably run away with a 3-0 win against a very, very good team, by the way, in Uruguay. Very good team. Anyway.
What time's kick tonight, House?
9 p.m.
Both teams. Eastern. Both teams play at the same time at 9 p.m. So by the time most people hear this pod, it'll already be over. Let's hope the USA gives us another July 4th fireworks.
All right. All right. We'll see everybody next week.
See you next time.
Happy 4th.
Bye, guys.
Happy 4th.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.